This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conquers3, and I'm here with my good colleagues, Alex De Groot. You can find Alex at De Groot Media on Twitter. And I'm here with Henry Viola Hare. You can find Henry on Twitter at HT Viola. And this is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 105. It's the 12th of July. For some people, it's sunny. For some people, it's miserable. I hope now that you listen to this podcast, it will bring you some joy. And we're going to talk about the markets, which have had a particularly good day for the first time in over a week. We've got a bit of a bounce going on, some positive numbers out of the US. And markets had a bit of a boost for the first time in how many weeks? Probably about a week and a bit. Fifth, yeah, exactly a week ago, we were at 7,000. Intraday high was 7,502. And we had a bit of a bounce today regarding the markets. So we're blessed to have that. We finished at 7,416 points today, up 1.83%, a massive gain for us. That's the biggest gain we've had since June. One day rise since June, and that was got the boost initially from positive US CPI data, and carried a couple of our stocks. We have been struggling over the past few days. Monday, new lows, and again Tuesday, intraday lows, and then this morning markets were a little bit soggy, and then after the CPI data came out, we're off to the races. So we're all happy today regarding the markets, but how long it can last, I don't know. We've got inflation data that's easing a little bit, and we've got, you know, we're going to speak about it later, Jeremy Hunt talking about getting pension funds and pensions to be investing in startups and AIMs. We'll talk about that a bit later on. We've got the bearings right, June 2023 Twin Peaks competition winner to announce, because Henry's sorted those numbers out. And we're also, I'm going to have to nip out and go and get my little mug, because I've got all my names in a little tub for all the people that entered the competition for Naked Traders book. I'll get my bearings in a minute. And we'll do a little draw. So if you see me disappearing off your screens, for those of you watching on YouTube, is I put loads of little names in a in a Memphis cup.
The old-fashioned way.
Do a draw of those individuals. We're going to have three individuals out of 19 entrants, I think it is, or something like that. So it's a really good opportunity for those 19 to win a book. And it's going to come directly from Harriman House, I believe, on the behalf of, the Naked Trader. Okie dokie. Guys, where do you want to start? What's going on? Been a bit of a hectic week. You know, if I just say to you guys, crack on and talk about it, I can nip and get my mug, and you guys can tell people what's been going on with the markets. No, go on, carry on. Henry, you're going to go first? Go on. What's been happening?
Yeah, I mean, for the first day in what feels, I mean, you say for a couple of weeks, for me, it feels like a couple of months. You know, I opened my portfolio to have a quick look at lunchtime and went, oh, you know, it's not on fire. It's been quite a nice bounce today. And like you say, I think this is the US printing inflation slightly lower, which is good news. Perhaps, maybe, possibly, we're starting to get on top of this. Inflation is a complex beast, so I wouldn't count your chickens before they've come home to roost. But maybe we're heading in the right direction at long last. So it's been a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I'd have to concur with that, guys. A good inflation print in the US, clearly a read across in terms of the markets today with the UK. UK often takes a lead from the US, particularly when, we've got this sort of 4 to 5 hour time zone difference between the two markets. So mid-morning in most city dealing rooms, they're taking a lead off what the US futures are doing. And obviously before the market opens, you get the prints, you get the data. And then the algos kick in, the machines kick in. Remember, it's not normally real people, it's nearly all machines these days. But yeah, inflation has been the big story all year. We all know that, remains the big story. The UK's felt a bit of a laggard in terms of inflation data and prints over the last 3 to 4 months. Feels to me as though we're slightly out of kilter with what's happening in other markets with inflation. But nonetheless, the US is the big daddy, isn't it? It's 70% of the world stock market. And I suspect there's quite a bit of money on the sidelines waiting to get stuck in, waiting to get back in the US and the UK. And so, yeah, it comes into play when we get a good print like this. And investors or people might be thinking, well, why? What difference does it make? It's all to do with interest rates. The interest rate expectations will be a tad less onerous, a tad less bearish with a better inflation print. And, interest rates going up is not the friend of equities. Interest rates going down is the friend of equities. So paradoxically, the US has been pretty strong anyway, in spite of this rate cycle. That's the paradox. But yeah, net net, good news on inflation, and so, markets go stronger.
Absolutely. I think you raise a really good point there, because basically what they're saying today, the market's saying today, is essentially for us in the UK, you've been weak. And now, despite the Americans being strong all this while we've been weak, the cooling sort of sentiment regarding less case or lesser case for interest rate rises by the Fed means that we can then relax, and I hope that our markets and our exporters, we've got loads of exporters in the FTSE All Share and a few in the AIM as well, can actually not have to fight as much inflation in the US. And if we have, and we can pray, have a print at some point or other which is less, which is showing to be slowing, and we get an opportunity to say, actually, we may be slowing our interest rate rises, then maybe then our market will start to steady. So we've going back to the FTSE, we've got our July high of the 3rd of July, 7,560. If we can get past that, that will make a new high for this month. Obviously, we've closed at 7,416, so we've got a bit of ways to go. That's another 2% or so to go. But if we can do that betwixt now and the end of July, that'd be a nice sort of move, because we did end up going down towards the 7,250s. We're on that cusp of give, no, heading towards that 7,000, which we don't want to do. And going back to 7,400, it gives a bit of a cushion of 400 points. Get above 7,560, we can start th thinking about, a bit more positively regarding the markets, if that makes sense. I want to touch on something which I'm not sure you guys saw today, which I thought was, and I need to raise this with you because it's partly concerning, then partly I'm a little bit intrigued as to why it happened. But there was a landmark case today, the UK Supreme Court. We don't often get it, hear it mentioned otherwise, there's stuff going on. And it ruled that Barclays was not liable to compensate victims of transfer fraud. Did any of you guys see that today?
I've not seen that. So is this where people transfer money to fraudsters and then try to claim it back from the bank?
A little bit like that. Yeah. So Barclays got stung by this, and then they won the appeal against the ruling. Ruling it's liable to compensate customers who are victims of bank transfer fraud. In the landmark case, the UK Supreme Court ruled it's not for the bank to concern itself with the wisdom or risk of its customers' payment decisions. Supreme Court Judge George Leggett added, where the customer is authorised and instructed the bank to make a payment, the bank must carry out the instruction promptly. This particular individual, and I'm reading this from an article, Fiona Phillip, who lost £700,000 through the transfer of money to bogus accounts in the UAE, accused Barclays of being remiss of its duties of care by allowing the move to go through. So the scams every year, and going back to app scams in 2021, was £600 million. So imagine the banks on an annual basis having to deal with that sort of balance that they're going to have to redress to their customers. So, yeah, so I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, and how we actually try and make sure that all of our listeners who are buying houses or transferring money tread carefully, I suppose.
I mean, that from Fiona's point of view, who's clearly lost out here, I mean, that's a horrific story, because you tend to put as much faith and credibility in your bank as you would do with your doctor or with any other trusted life partner, business partner. So for Barclays to sort of wriggle out of that, and then for the Supreme Court to find in their favour, to me, I mean, that would be a case precedent, won't it? So that's I mean, well spotted, Pete. That is alarming from my point of view, and probably something people on the pod should be aware of, because, you know, as you say, if you're transacting a house deal, or I don't know, there's been a bereavement and there's big sums of money floating around, you know, your sort of gut feeling is it's got to be safe, it's got to be secure. But here we are talking about.
And if it's not, and if it's not, the bank will sort it out for you, or check it, verify where it's going to. Because I can't access my account half the time. It's saying, please, can you just clarify who you are? Here's a secondary authentication. I'm like, it's my money. I'm just moving it from there to there. I want to take some out. I want to, you know, pay for this. And then you're making a transaction like that and they don't verify it's going to the right people.
Yeah.
It's just I'm not so sure it is that, though. I mean, to me, this is more about me talking to, let's say, Peter for a year, and Peter saying, oh yes, I'm an investment advisor and I'm very trustworthy, and I transfer the money and then I never hear from Peter again. In that instance, the bank has done what I've asked them to do. It just turns out that Peter's a fraudster. You know, and I think there's an awful lot of that going on. And to my mind, you as an individual are responsible for that. You should check where you are sending this and who you're sending it to. Now, in the event that I ask them to send it to Peter and they actually send it to Alex, that's totally different. But I don't think that case is about that. You know, I one thing I do like, you know, my bank, HSBC, they have a very good verification system now where they check the name on the account. So when I'm making an online transfer and I'm transferring to Joe Bloggs Incorporated, I put the name in, I put the sort code in, I put the account number in, and it tells me if the details match. And if they don't, it flags it. And so that gives me a level of assurance that, okay, at least I'm sending it where I think I'm sending it. But in the event that that person is a fraudster, you've lost the money. You know, you've transacted with a fraudulent individual. And I'm not entirely convinced that that really should be on the bank to prevent.
Yeah, it's a difficult one.
Well, isn't it? Without knowing all the details, it's a little bit hard to sort of second guess. I mean, go on, guys.
I was going to say, I think for me, the big rule of thumb here has got to be just watch out for vulnerable people that have got access to online bank accounts. Because, yes, you could have your grandmother called out of the blue and asked to transfer £700,000 to Joe Bloggs Incorporated, and she might do it. And then you've lost the money. And I think that is the really alarming thing about this. You know, just be very, very careful who's got access to accounts and the ability to transfer funds, because vulnerable individuals do need protecting. And if the bank isn't going to be held liable, then that protection needs to be doubly so from friends and family around them.
Do you know what, guys? Really, it's really interesting, because as you know, maybe some of the listeners should know, I'm dealing with a family bereavement at the moment, and so there are going to be issues around you know, settling a will and all that sort of stuff. And when you reach out to the banks these days, what's really interesting to me is that the assumption is that you are a digital native, that you can use apps, that you've got a smartphone, that you're competent when it comes to navigating a digital banking payments landscape. But if you're over 60, 70, maybe 80, you're probably not. And it does slightly disconcert me that we're sort of closing down our bank real estate, that we're closing down the high street banks, which I think for a whole generation of people was really their lifeline when it came to personal banking. And they're now being forced online in many cases, perhaps without necessarily having the knowledge or understanding the safeguards. That's a sort of a bit of a tangent to what we were talking about there with this Supreme Court case, but it does show how the world of banking is changing. And yeah, customers have got to be very vigilant.
Agreed. And this is the digital era, isn't it? It's forcing us down that cashless route. And like I say, obviously they've got the reasons. They want to track everyone's transactions. But like you said, we're living in an aging population, you know. So, and a lot of these individuals used to go in and know the bank manager, you know, and used to go in there once a week and take money out, you know, regarding the pensions. And now everyone's being forced online. Oh. We're not only losing the banks, we're losing some of our post offices as well. You know, yep. Because of how difficult that's been getting as a business to actually run. So yeah. Yep. So I just wanted to raise that because you know we've got a lot of people who are transacting money for a variety of different things, and just to be vigilant regarding all of that. Regarding AIM, moving on to the markets, back to the markets again. AIM closed today, all share up 1%, 1.06%. At 746, still way down from that cushion of 800. But I wanted to raise one quick stock, which absolutely surged today, because we saw some news about Centrica investing a ton of money on offshore LNG, which, you know, it goes back to my argument of why can't we be sustain our own energy policies? But hey ho, I won't get into that. But
EQTech,
ticker symbol EQT, surged today because it agreed to sell a 65% interest regarding a French market development centre to IDEX. I'm not sure you've heard of IDEX before, but this is a London-based technology firm that's focused on distributed carbonized new energy infrastructure via waste to value solutions from hydrogen, biofuels, energy generation, et cetera, et cetera. And I just thought that was a really interesting sort of move by them, basically to shore up what they want regarding cash. And they retain a 5% interest in that and receive, it's not a lot of money, but it's a lot of money for them as a tiny little company. And obviously they'll get other commissions going forward regarding their 5% interest. So I just thought it was a nice little move for a tiny little company. AIM's been completely unloved. It's been completely smashed. And there's a couple of little takeovers going on as well in that sort of space. So, interesting times.
I think really a really interesting strategic move. And it highlights again that, you know, when a market has been battered like AIM has, there are going to be some really unloved stocks, some stocks which have much more than just option value. Maybe EQ Tech is one of them. And, you know, companies operate on a lot of different levels. They operate with their stock market hat on, but they also have their other stakeholders and their trade partners. And a lot of corporates have a lot of money and they have a need to grow via M&A or via strategic partnership. If that involves buying an equity stake in a business, which could recapitalize that business, which could give them another 12 months runway, then all of a sudden you have significant upside on the shares. So, you know, scanning AIM for companies like that, I think, would not be a bad idea, because you can see the size of the move is really eye-catching.
Absolutely, absolutely. Have you been watching any AIM stocks this week, Henry? What's on your radar?
Not AIM stocks. I've got two mega caps. both over in America, actually.
Okay.
So the first is a company called UiPath, which listeners might have heard of. The ticker is PATH. And this is a $1 billion market cap company that's focused on managing automations for companies. It provides customers with a set of capabilities that are all around using automation and the digital workforce in conjunction with physical, you know, real employees, mm-hmm. And helping companies to develop automation programs at scale. So really interesting space to be in, especially with the rise of things like AI. This technology is becoming more and more real and more prevalent. The business currently doesn't make a profit, but it's had a 63% compound annual growth rate in their revenue. It's on a net cash position of nearly $1 billion. So they're not going to be running out of money anytime soon. And it's had minimal equity dilution. We're talking sort of 1% over 5 years. And so I was doing some research into that this week and just having a look at it and seeing what they do, because everyone's talking about AI and there are lots of firms out there other than Nvidia, you know, so go and take a look, people.
Absolutely. Good call. I like the fact that it's got, like you say, tons of cash. So are they going to be acquisitive, or is somebody going to pounce on the cash and buy them up, you know, whilst they're sitting there doing nothing, whilst they're still waiting to decide what they're going to do with the cash, which often happens, you know, because as I keep saying to lots of people, cash is an asset and, you know, gives you optionality, having that cash. And a lot of companies haven't got cash. So these predators, these private equity companies come in, load them up with, you know, buy companies with cash with their debts. So it's quite clever. It could be a clever move. So yeah, I like that one. Thank you for sharing that one. I want to touch on, and I'm not going to moan about it, but Henry and I saw a story today, so I'm going to share this story. And this is back to ARM. And is it going to be, I'm sorry, what's going to be the valuation of it regarding their listing on the New York Stock Exchange eventually? And basically, there's a bit of a backstory here, because NVIDIA are basically trying to buy a chunk of ARM when it lists. But we have to go back, and I'm sure Alex will remember this as well, go back to around 2020, and NVIDIA was trying to buy or plan to buy ARM from SoftBank for $40 billion at that time. But the competition regulators on both sides of the Atlantic, the US and the UK, basically voiced concerns about the combination and how much power NVIDIA would have on within the semiconductor industry, the chips industry. And the pressure from the Federal Trade Commission, US, and the Competition and Mergers Authority in the UK basically made sure that that deal did not go ahead. So now, today's reports from the FT was basically saying that SoftBank, Uwe Harm, and NVIDIA were wrangling over the evaluation regarding ARM. NVIDIA wants to value ARM at $35 billion. And the owners, SoftBank, are looking for a valuation closer to $80 billion. So you can see the discrepancy there. And I'm going back to when, you know, they nicked it off me. I have to say it. It came out. Sorry, guys. When SoftBank nicked it off me, I think it went for $24 billion or there or thereabouts. So you can see why after, you know, 6-7 years, SoftBank want to maximize the valuation that they can get for ARM. Hence the reason why they didn't list it in the UK. And they want the valuation nearer to $80 billion. So there's a big discrepancy there. But it looks like NVIDIA are trying to get hold of a chunk of ARM as we speak. So whether or not SoftBank will come to a deal with them or not will be very, very interesting indeed. And if that is the case, does that mean that other chip manufacturers will be wanting to get a slice? Because we've already got everyone talking about NVIDIA leading the AI race. So why would anybody want them to get even further ahead by getting a chunk of ARM? I don't know.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Any thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, are we saying that NVIDIA would potentially own, for example, 20% of the company? Is that the sort of feeling here, that it would be a minority shareholder?
Shareholder, yes. I don't think it's going to be up to about 20%. I think probably between 5 and 10, maybe. But it's still, whatever they go at, they want the valuation to be down there at 35. You know what I mean? Because you've seen the share price of NVIDIA has gone absolutely silly over the last year and a half. They can put a wad of paper down, can't they?
They can. You know,
here's some NVIDIA shares. So,
but I think this goes back to how you value companies. And there have been lots of instances where unlisted companies have been valued at whatever, and then when they've tried to realise that value, they've had to take a huge haircut. You're now seeing it with these big names that have been public, go private, then want to relist. There's a huge discrepancy, especially with interest rates doing what they're doing, between what the different sides think are reasonable valuations. You know, I mean, Nvidia to me is on an absolutely ludicrous valuation, and yet the current owners of it clearly think it's sensible. So I don't know. I don't know which side of that argument with Arm is the right one. I don't know where, to my mind, if it was worth 24 a few years ago, 30 seems on the low side, especially considering the demand for chips.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at the valuation of what where Arm was when it was taken over by SoftBank in 2016-17, yeah, at 24 billion, what was the valuation of Nvidia in 2016-2017? It's just gone. So therefore, if you're going to give it a comparison, relative comparison, then you need to be able to maximize it. And that's what SoftBank are going to try and do. So I don't blame them hanging out for the best valuation. They've been through a few difficulties themselves. But it looks like they're trying to get some anchor investors in there. So they've spoken to the likes of Intel, Alphabet, Apple, Microsoft, and Samsung ahead of the potential IPO. So very, very interesting times for Arm. And if it does eventually list, which it will do, looks like it'll be the largest IPO in 2023. So lots of activity that might boost the markets and the tech market as well. Alex, the noise around Microsoft Activision.
Yeah.
You know, in the California courts, no surprise, basically saying, we can't see any reason why this deal can't go ahead. You know, what a surprise there.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I think really, you know, my money was always on the fact that this deal would go ahead. And I was a little bit surprised when the CMA in the UK, the CMA, our regulator, was quite so hostile to the deal, particularly around cloud gaming. And I didn't think it sat well with a government that wants to sort of give the impression of Britain being open for business. And that's without us sort of getting into the rights or wrongs of Microsoft owning Activision. But I just felt Microsoft's power in the market, their lobbying power, all the sort of direction of travel was that the deal was going to get done. And it looked like it was going to get done. And the CMA, I would imagine, will just have to fall in line with the FTC or with the US. I can't see them being an outlier. Or they can work with the company to try and solve the problems that they may have over cloud gaming. But I think net-net, I see the deal getting done. Was it $69 billion? So massive transaction.
Yeah.
Massive transaction.
Massive.
Bit of a game changer for the gaming industry. Microsoft, I think, of all the big tech stocks, Microsoft's the one that sort of pursued a bit of a softly M&A strategy over the last few years. I mean, through LinkedIn, it's built up this fantastic B2B social media platform. You know, obviously through Xbox, they've built a gaming franchise. You've then got the Office 365 suite and so on and so forth. They've basically carved out extremely strong market positions in about five tech verticals. And this, of course, in gaming would strengthen their hand again. So, you know, well done, Satya Nadella. And yeah, it looks to me like this deal is going to happen now. So, yeah, I think that's a big deal. Talking about big deals, I'm talking about Arm being a big IPO. This is a big M&A deal.
Yeah, and there's another one going on, a big M&A going through. Broadcom Inc., $61 billion acquisition of cloud computing company VMware is poised to be approved by European Union's merger officials. Which would be the world's biggest takeover for a semiconductor maker. So you can see lots of stuff going on there with the chip sector, cloud, AI, sort of space. There's lots of people just getting themselves in position for 2024, 25 and the next decade. So massive, massive sort of consolidation going on. So people are going to be watching exactly what sort of valuation. If VMware is going for for that sort of valuation, then what valuation should Arm get? So all these arguments are going to be going on for a little while. So very interesting sort of merger and acquisitions going on. So we can have a busy, busy summer.
I think we really are. And you know what, guys? Corporates with M&A, they take a long-term view. It's not necessarily the same as a private equity firm or the likes of us. They can take a 5-10-year view on how they think an acquisition could benefit them in terms of synergies and growth and market opportunities and returns from a deal. So I think corporates are going to be very active. You're absolutely right, Peter. And there's going to be a lot of M&A. And AI isn't going to go away as a theme, is it? It's going to be as relevant in a year's time today. So I think investors really do need exposure to AI as a theme, probably along with payments. And what's happening with Arm is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, funnily enough, this probably brings us round to the Mansion House speech by Jeremy Hunt on Monday night, because, of course, the UK government wanted Arm to list in the UK. And Jeremy Hunt is talking about strengthening UK capital markets, because they will feel it painfully that Arm has gone down the New York route. But it was always going to go down the New York route, realistically. The size of the company is so big. Interesting thoughts from Jeremy Hunt on Monday. Maybe we'll come on to that now or shortly.
Yeah, let's go for it now, because he wants everyone to start, all the pensions companies to collaborate and start investing in the UK.
Hands off my pension. I'm not a fan. I'm really not a fan.
Well, this is the beauty of the discussion, because, there's this whole issue of it being a bit of a nanny state thing. If you want the UK to invest in UK companies, then get the companies to invest in UK companies. But to be told, or not to be told, to be orchestrated by the government to say, we need to be doing this. There's people saying, if you've got an ISA, you should be investing in only UK companies. I just think that's nonsense. The whole point of it is you've already paid the tax, so it's not like a gift.
It's putting the cart before the horse. So the outcome they're trying to drive is to get more capital into small, fast-growing businesses in the UK, which, big tick from me, by the way. I love that. But to do that, they've mandated that capital, well, not mandated, they're trying to encourage capital to be deployed in these types of businesses. What they ought to be doing is asking the question, why isn't the capital going there anyway of its own volition? Why aren't investors and hedge funds and pension funds putting this capital in? If you look over the last 20 years, pensions have dramatically reduced the amount of exposure they've got to UK equities. Why has that happened? To me, would be a more sensible way of tackling this than just saying, right, take 5% of the pensions market and drop it into AIM, or, however they've phrased it.
Mm. The beauty of it is, for me, is that if and it's not a mandatory thing, and it's these companeys have signed up to say they'll probably participate in it. They're looking for, what's the figure here? 750 billion boost from pension funds from UK startups. And that startups, as a startup, you can be a startup for 5 years. We've seen some of the stocks on AIM, they've been listed for 5 years. They're still startups, just generating any revenue. But, if they can make investments in our smaller companies, it boosts the whole of the ecosystem. It helps to retain jobs. It puts some sticky holders within those companies, unlisted ones and listed ones as well.
Patient capital.
It's less trading and churning of the shareholders register as well. So it could be a good thing. I just don't like it when the government try and coerce people to do stuff or entities to do stuff. That's my only caveat regarding it all. What are your thoughts about it all? Because it's going to impact some AIM stocks, Alex, as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, Henry and I were chatting about this, and we were saying one of the sort of slight oddities here is that the narrative is basically around unlisted equities, but actually AIM, for these guys, AIM qualifies as an unlisted equity, which I've never heard of before. But
as many of our listeners will know, AIM is very much listed.
AIM is listed, not unlisted. So I think if I look at the big picture, guys, I feel good about this package of reforms in the big picture, because it shows that policymakers and the government and insurers, big asset managers, they want to do something, right? And there is a sort of notional commitment, although, as you say, Peter, it's voluntary, not mandatory. But nevertheless, it looks like they might be backstopping quite a lot of investment in UK growth, UK tech, life sciences. So that's got to be good. I think the reality is the proof will be in the pudding and in the execution. And, you know, let's see.
I would really love to hear, there's been lots of positive noises from fund managers. You know, there's six or seven that big names that came out. I think it was Aberdeen, you know, Standard Life, Phoenix Group, etc. Very positive about it. But my question to all of them would be, why, if you were positive on this, there was nothing stopping you doing it already, why were you not doing this already?
Yeah.
You know, that's the big red flag to me. And all of a sudden the government suggested it and now you think it's a great idea. It doesn't quite stack up.
Exactly. And let's not forget, you know, it's just like two or three years ago, really, that the whole Woodford thing blew up with the issue of unlisted equities. And you thought you were investing in income, but in fact, it was income with some rinky-dinks. And the rinky-dinks were basically loss-making life sciences businesses in Cambridge and Oxford. And then there was...
Sorry, just from the back of the class here, for the dumbos, what's a rinky-dink, Alex?
It's a technical city term.
City term. Dictionary definition of rinky-dink equals banana skins. Sort of slightly, you know, a bit weirdness really going on, because Neil Woodford was you know, massive income fund manager, but quietly on the side he was building up a portfolio of interesting but highly speculative
non-income producing, non-profit making type businesses.
Absolutely. And we know what happened, and it's still playing out in the courts, and a lot of people lost a lot of money. So, you know, that was a commercial fund manager as opposed to insurance company, but it's the same thing, really. And really, the big thing is, how do you value an unlisted business? You know, and when do you mark to market? And what happens if this is a down round and you've got to recapitalize it? How do you tell that to the pensioners? You know, there is a fundamental difference between being a pensioner and being a retail investor, and all that entails in terms of risk appetite. And
income demand as well. I mean, you and I aren't living off our portfolios, whereas, again, to go back to Mrs. Miggins, the grandmother, she is living off her pension.
Yeah.
You know, she can't afford to wait 5 years for this little biotech startup to start producing revenue or profit for that matter. She needs the income.
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. So I think there's the good news is there's lots of goodwill. And anything that puts a bit of a firework into AIM has got to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And in my experience of working with small caps over the last few years in a brokerage environment, you know, there aren't many institutions that want to play in anything below 150 mil market cap. You know, Slater maybe, Gervais Williams at Premier Miton maybe, but beyond that, not much institutional interest, mainly VCTs. So anything that persuades big institutions to get stuck in has got to be a good thing. That will provide cornerstones for deals and for investment. But I suspect the proof is in the pudding. And am I right in thinking, Peter, this is supposed to happen in 2030? It's currently 2023. So, you know, there's a long way to go between now and then.
Yeah, it's a long way to go. And talking about years ahead, I'm just going to find my little notes here. Is basically talking about mortgages. Yeah, this is a shocker, and you know, Henry's a bit younger than us, so it might affect him a bit more than us that have, you know, are mortgage free. But my concern with all the stuff regarding the interest rates, going back to interest rates, is where mortgages are going and interest rates. And basically, it's basically coming out of the Bank of England today saying that there's a UK mortgage time bomb. And the numbers are bad. Basically, an increase of £500 per month is coming for 1 million households between now and 2026. So £500 a month starting from now is £6,000 per year. Yeah.
I'll have so to that give equates up all those avocado to, toasts and cups of coffee I've been buying, I suppose.
Yeah. Six grand per month per year for somebody equates to a pay cut of about 10 grand a year. Yeah. So we need to compensate for those. Someone needs to be making an extra 10 grand a year on their ISA, don't they? In a large portfolio and not making any losses. So we could do with all the investments going into AIM and lower startups and scale ups and having some of them list on the stock market and actually boosting the returns for pensions and all the rest of it. And I think that's what Jeremy Hunt and co are playing at, really. But it probably won't come quick enough for people that are expecting mortgages to increase by £500 a month going forward. And my concern is that there's some people that are mortgage free, but we've got to be concerning ourselves with people that aren't mortgage free and also the renters out there who are seeing the landlords either saying, I'm shutting up shop and I'm selling the property, or I'm going to increase your rent by £100 per month or £150 per month, because some people simply haven't got that kind of money. You know, so yeah, it's a bit concerning what's going on out there, but it's alarming how much the mortgages are increasing.
I'm sure, Peter, you remember as well, but basically post the GFC, sort of 08-09, you know, rates fell to practically zero, and we had more or less 10-15 years of that. So there's now a generation homeowner that's never seen a rate rise, let alone 10. And it's going to be, if you're on a relatively fixed income, it's an absolute shocker. And my simple logic has always been, you know, a third of the people own their house, no mortgage, a third rent, and a third have a mortgage. So that's two thirds of that universe is going to be affected. The renters, because as you say, you know, landlords are going to jack up rent. And obviously those that do have a mortgage where it's coming to the end of that fixed term. So, yeah, I mean, the implications of this for personal finance are quite significant. And it may well be that some of the weakness we've seen in a lot of consumer names in the UK is because the market is trying to second guess or anticipate consumer slowdown on the back.
I agree with you.
You know, the drawdown, the 600 you're talking about. I mean, that's basically somebody's summer holiday. Pretty much.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was talking recently, well, a couple of months back now, regarding Sanderson Design, Hosh wallpapers and, you know, accessories and all the rest of it. And its shares was about 130, 140. And I was saying to somebody, basically, he was saying, what do you think of this stock? I said, stay well away from it. I said, because, you know, even the people that I know that are wealthy aren't going to go and change the wallpaper this year. You know, I know people that change the wallpapers every 2 or 3 years, mate. And I'm like, they aren't going to be doing it this year. If there's something that they can do without, they're going to be doing without changing the wallpaper and the accessories this year if they don't need to do it. And I did say the share price was going to go to about £1. It's edging towards that now. And as soon as we get some positive numbers from the markets regarding inflation not going any higher, and interest rates maybe not, you know, not rushing much higher, all those sort of noises about mortgages, I think, will just quell a little bit, and that will boost the whole market. And Sanderson shares will probably do okay again because it's a quality company. But yeah. It's a worry because loads of consumer names are coming out with profit warnings. And interestingly enough, regarding the takeovers we've had this week so far. DWF we saw coming out of the dark legal firm, basically private equity again, private equity partners regarding a possible buyout. Tiny little company, with a deal worth 342 million, and then you've got STM potentially getting a takeover approach as well, regarding pension super funds capital, a vehicle controlled by Eddie Truell, looking to take over that tiny little company as well. But nobody wants to buy any consumer-related companies. You see the link here?
Yeah.
They want to do that. They want to see an IPO that's failed and take it back off the market again and then do something with it and come back and probably list it again in a couple of years. But not much going on regarding the consumer-related entities. Nobody wants to take them over yet at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You look at a name like Boohoo trading at 34p. And THG only back up at 80, and as you say, Sanderson and you go on and on and on. And I think the problem is the market's expecting a lot of these names to see reasonable downgrades in the second half, earnings downgrades. So, I mean, we'll have to see, won't we, what happens to a lot of these names. But yeah, consumer is a bit which is getting overlooked, and it's got to be because of the macro right now.
Which absolutely will, agree.
It will turn, but maybe not for a little while.
Yeah, I saw THG touch. So it's when I was trading a couple of months back, and I did quite well out of it. It actually went down to sub 60 pence recently, and it's back up at a pound to touch the pound again today. So I've missed out on a little trade there. But the one I've got my eye on again, having got battered on it last time, is Boohoo, completely unloved. Everyone's talking about ASOS, and that's had a boost in its share price.
THG is
It's a horrible company, horrible name. It's been massacred. But ASOS is now having a good run, having been completely hated over the past couple of months, or a year nearly. Share price completely decimated. THG the same. And Boohoo is still sitting there, just rocking, sitting there, going nowhere. There's no talk from the company, completely unloved. And I'm looking, waiting for something, looking for the volume change, looking for something to happen regarding that stock. And it'll be a trade. It won't be an investment, but I've got my eye on that one. You guys talk about one stock. I need to get my little stuff with the names in regarding the competition. Just bear with me. Carry on.
Okay. Alex, do you want to fly one, or do you want to hear my second pick?
I would love to hear your second pick, Henry, please.
Okay, so my second one. Listeners might know Peter and I both hold the London Stock Exchange Group. And I was looking at alternatives to that, which is, the one I was looking at is NASDAQ Inc. And the ticker for that is NDAQ. Very similar sort of business that serves capital market services with data analytics, software, etc. for all kinds of markets. You know, they do equity, cash equity, derivatives, fixed income, clearing, trade management software, all kinds of great stuff. It's on a PE of 17, and it's really stalled as global markets have, you know, tumbled as inflation's gone up. It's really stalled in terms of share price. It's got a 9% dividend compound annual growth rate, which was what one of the things that attracted me to it. Listeners might know I'm a big fan of income investments. And not only has it grown its dividend by 9% over something like 6 years, it's got 3x dividend cover. A very, very secure dividend, very stable, high quality business there, which, you know, you may want to add a little bit to your portfolio if you are interested in market, I call it market plumbing. I'm sure there's a nicer term for it than that, but, you know, whatever makes the financial system work. NASDAQ Inc. is one listeners might want to go and have a look at.
Interesting. Another interesting one, Henry. Have you heard of that one before, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I know of it. I can't claim I've ever been. But what sort of size would it be, Henry? Do you know what the market cap would be, roughly?
It's got an enterprise value of about £22 billion.
Okay.
Wow. So it's a big boy, definitely. And that's one of the things that attracted it to me. You know, in previous podcasts, I've talked about wanting some stability. I like businesses that have got the revenue. They've got the cash on the balance sheet. They can service their debt if they've got any. They're not going to disappear tomorrow. And to me, NASDAQ is very much a stable that if the stock market shut down tomorrow and didn't open for 10 years, I could come back in 10 years and it would still be going.
Got it. Yeah.
Good point. Good point. Okie dokie. All right, chaps, can we have an interlude now? I'm going to do a competition, that's all right with you guys.
Go for it.
We had Robbie Burns very generously via our host, Wheelie Dealer, donated us three books for his brand new book, which is the Naked Trader book of trading strategies. And we've got three up for grabs. I put the competition out. The deadline was today. I've not actually checked if anyone else entered after 5 o'clock today or just before 5 o'clock. I went with the names I had from last night and early this morning, and I've chopped them up and I've put them into this little jar. Can you see me shaking this jar, folks?
Yeah.
All the names in there.
That's so a big jar for you, me and Alex.
What's that again?
That's a big jar for you, me and Alex. It's only three names in there, right?
No. There's 19 names in there.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
So, yeah. Yeah. There's... Oh, that went right over my head, Henry. Sorry. So, yeah, the first winner is Alex. Second one is Henry.
There you go. You got there
and
in the end.
And the third is me. Voila. No, sorry. No. I completely missed that. You threw me off my train of thought, Henry. Sorry. I'm completely lost my plot now. So, someone's going to win a book, and then we'll what you've got to do then is just contact me either on the YouTube channel if you're on YouTube, or find me on Twitter and say, Pete, my account number is this on YouTube, and I've won the book. So I need your email address to give to them and an address as well so they can post it out to you. So here we go. Drum roll. Okay.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPETES promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Okay, here we go. The first winner of the book, Robbie's book, is at Glenn Whelan 9866 on
Hey!
YouTube. So well done, Glenn. Bravo.
The crowd's
You've
going
got
wild.
Robbie Burns' book. Bravo. Okay. The other winner is at PORL99, at Paul99. Another winner. Well done.
Congratulations.
PORL99. Here we go. And the third winner is at Spitfire Pat on YouTube. So those are the three winners of the competition for Robbie's book. Well done, all three of you. Thank you for entering the competition. And thank you for all of you, ladies and gents, that have subscribed to the YouTube channel. Please continue to subscribe to that. We've nudged over 900. We're heading towards the 1,000. We've had some really good listens to the last podcast on YouTube. So that's all working tickety-boo. And thank you for entering, and we'll get the books to you. Contact me on Twitter if you're on Twitter. If not, tell me on YouTube what you're up to, and I'll get the books flying out to you. Over to you, Alex. What do you want to add regarding anything before I go on to the June winner of the Twin Peaks Challenge?
Yeah, so guys, I was just going to touch upon a company called Cab Payments that listed last week and started trading yesterday, I think, formally. Market cap about £850 million. It's an FX payments business. Looks to be a very high margin business. Trading at around the 310 mark. I think the offer price was 335, so it's already below the offer price. But you've got to give the company a few weeks to settle down in terms of trading patterns. And the reason I mention this, because I'm going to be doing a little bit of work on it, is that it's one of the few sizable mid-cap IPOs we've had in the UK in the last 12 months. I believe the company's based out of Sutton originally, And the LSE was obviously making a big fanfare about this when they did the bell last week to launch the IPO. So new company launched in the payment space, cab payments, looks to be high margin, I think 60 million of EBITDA. I'm going to be doing a bit of work on it, maybe talk about it next time round. But for people that like new companies to generate a bit of alpha, either on the upside or the downside, there's a new one to look at. We think Wise probably would be the biggest large cap peer to think about in terms of this company. But we'll do a little bit more work and come back to you with a bit more review, perhaps in coming weeks. So that's cab payments, a new listing in the UK. Second one, and I'm only going to mention this at the highest possible level, Vodafone at 70p.
Don't.
70p. I think, let's be honest, we've all tried to call the bottom of Vodafone and failed. But it's almost as if the market just doesn't care about this three deal. And maybe that's right. But at 70p, I can tell you that the chairman and the board would be getting serious pressure to do something. So
yeah, if you could hurry up about it, I'd be very grateful.
Yeah, because we probably could have had this conversation 12 months ago.
Yeah,
we did.
But if you like sticking your foot in a bear trap, that's one to buy. That is
the bizarre thing about the whole Vodafone thing for me is that it was the absolute go-to company, was it not, for telecommunications in the UK? Yep. It was sitting there. It was like X growth, what growth, and it was paying a nice dividend, and the share price was either flat or just growing and moving at 5%. You could compound that with the dividend, and you made 7% or 10% per year compounded. It was fine, not going anywhere. Almost like having a utility company / tobacco company, staple. And then everyone's going, it's a bargain, and it just keeps drifting and drifting. It's so unloved now. It's unnerving, you know. And it's one of those companies think, surely it can't be taken over. Surely somebody can't come in and buy that. But who knows, because it's as cheap as chips. And what happens is that somebody could come in and go, wallop, we'll have that. As these private equity companies do, they get the partner up with another company and they go, let's have that, and leverage up to the yin yang. And then they break it up. It's two parts, three parts, four parts, and maximize what they can do. So it's another possibility. What is it at? Is it a 10-year low or a 20-year low, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, 10-year low. If you run the chart, it hasn't been lower. I mean, they've all the telco plays, not many of them, of course, but the telco players are all having a tough time. Obviously, we saw Janssen announce he was standing down from BT as well.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
The Vodafone piques my interest because it's coming at the time of the three deal. So
that's not saved it. Now, I think the margins are very slim in telco. There's a lot of debt that, you know, they're big, they're unwieldy. I think the only hope for Vodafone is that somebody does come in and break it up. And I think there's a lot of value there to be unlocked. But I was saying that 40% higher than where we are today, you know. So I'm hoping I'm not still saying it 40% lower from here. Otherwise, I'll be selling my shirt.
Guys, do you remember?
I think the beauty of it is that, sorry, Alex. I think the beauty of it is that as a company, and maybe this is why Janssen's gone, right? Maybe they're already instigating some structural change. And maybe he's gone, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be part of that. You know, because they've got to do something. This deal with Three is something, but other stuff that's going on periphery to them, they could do some other structural changes elsewhere, reduce the debt and start to get back to growth. But yeah, it's a huge, huge, huge company.
Yeah,
and it deserves a better valuation than it's got.
Yeah, I mean, market, you know, Henry was talking about NASDAQ, 22 billion. I mean, Vodafone today is like less than 19, I think. So, I mean, for those of us that have been around a long time and remember the Mannesmann deal, do you remember that piece of work back in the day?
Yes.
I
mean, oh, yes.
Massive. Company. So, anyway, look, I think it probably is one to have on your watch list, but there will be a lot of people who are sort of stale bulls of Vodafone. I talked about Future on a previous pod, Future Publishing, Future PLC. And worth flagging that they have a share buyback few days ago, 45 million quid. Shares have gone from 70 to about 790. And the only point to make is basically it just shows if you get a really cheap stock and then the company announces a buyback, you know, it takes out all the shorts. That's the first thing.
And second,
theoretically quite EPS accretive. So I'm not claiming that Future is the best company of all time, but it had got horrendously oversold down to about the 650 level. And Vodafone, much bigger company, but I put it in the same sort of camp. Totally, to use your phrase, totally unloved.
Yeah, there's a really nice, when you can smell the bears running, when a company goes out, we're going to actually do a nice big chunky buyback, and they go, and straight away they've got to start closing their position. You just see the share prices just moving up. So yeah, I'm pleased they've come back to do something regarding the share, because it was unloved and it deserves a better footing. But you know, it is what it is, and I think there's going to be more buybacks. I think there was something I read. Crikey, I must get this right. I think I've read it somewhere where it was something similar to about 150 million pounds per day or per week was going into buybacks in the earlier part of this year, within FTSE and AIM, buybacks daily or weekly, staggering amount of buybacks.
Yeah,
across the markets. And I'm thinking, wow, because my sense of buybacks has always been, you know, you should be doing something better with that money, you know, R&D, investments, whatever. But if you can shake up a few shorters, occasionally it might be a good thing to boost your share price as well. Okie dokie. Where are we at? What have we got, guys? Don't mean to carry on? Do the June competition
I
now?
I'm dying to hear who's won the competition.
Right. Yes, please.
Our listeners are dying to hear.
Right. Ladies and gents, we've got the June winner of the Twin Peaks Investing Challenge. Our good friend here, Mr. Henry Viola Hare, has crunched the numbers. And the June winner, oh, we're doing it in reverse order as we always do. We can't go straight to the winner. Sorry. Apologies. Get you all excited. We've got at Lewis Tullett in third place for June at 13.83%. So very well done, because June was a very, very difficult month as well. So bravo, Lewis, with 13.83. And then we've got at underscore Martin 13 with 14.2% for June. So very well done in second place there, Martin. And we have a winner who seems to have done this with almost one share being positive from what Henry's written me in the notes here. At Stuart underscore Dolby on Twitter won the month with 18% in June, staggering amount in June. And what's in his portfolio, you ask? He's got XP Factory, ticker symbol XPF. He's got Coral Products, CRU. He's got E-Energy Group, ticker symbol EAAS. Hevo, ticker symbol HVO. And the one that did the heavy carrying for him in June was Predator Oil and Gas, PRD, which went up over 100% during the month of June. So carried the whole portfolio, essentially. So that's really, really significant regarding the markets for that particular one. There was some notes here, I believe that. Yeah, Henry did give me some notes here. And basically was saying that right now, across the whole of the competition for year to date, we're almost at the halfway point, Stuart Dolby is firmly in the lead. So he's up for the whole caboodle, the 12 months with ShareScope, the all 15 books from Harriman House, and the big day out with Powder Monkey Brewery, slab of beer, design your own beer, taste your own beer, do the whole nine yards. And with 36% return at the moment for the whole year to date, that's pretty darn good.
It's astonishing.
We've got Raj Ramira. Big shout out to Raj. He's in second place with 20.5%. And we've got at Tigers Revival with 19% in third place. I'm in 12th position at the moment. I think, is it Tesla? Tesla I've got in my portfolio, yeah. That's doing all the heavy carrying. But remember, I can't win the competition anyway. So I'm up 11% year to date. Henry's in 24th position at the moment with 2%. And Wheelie is down in 30th place with 0.03. Remember, the first month, Wheelie was winning as well, the first month of that competition. So very well done, everybody. I've listed the books before. From Stuart, I need your email and your address. So contact me via DMs or on Twitter and we'll sort something out regarding that. Don't forget, for any of you, you can go to Powder Monkey Brewery and get yourselves a lovely 5% off your beers for the summer by visiting www.powdermonkeybrewing.com for 5% off. Just put it in the purchase box, Twin Peaks, and you get 5% off.
It's very good.
Other thing to mention, we've had some donations in the Memphis charity Just Giving Pay, so I really appreciate that. So for those of you that wish to do that, please, please, please do so. www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Twin Peaks Challenge. We've hit the 2,000 mark. So thank you all ever so much. And we had David B, 4 days ago, made a £27 plus £6.75 gift aid donation to take us to the 2,000. And he wrote, from a long-term investor to your podcast, to get you to the 2,000 level, we'll donate more when I can. So thank you ever so much, David. And we had PID7, 7 days ago, donated a fiver and £1.25 gift aid. So PID, thank you ever so much. So that's me covered regarding all of that, ladies and gents. Not sure what else you guys want to share, but we've done the hour. Anything you want to add, Alex, regarding the markets, apart from the fact that you're going to be doing a shed load of work for cab payments, mate? So congratulations on that piece of work. We're going to be talking very soon, hopefully. I won't let the cat out of the bag soon, but people will be getting a little bit of a heads up. The cues in the next conversation I'm going to have regarding new interview going out regarding investing matters went live today with a young man by Jay Younger from Scotland, currently working with Aubrey Capital. Absolutely smashing it regarding investing as an analyst, and he's covering the AIM portfolio for Aubrey Capital. Find it on the Investing Matters and find it on my Conquest 3 Twitter account. I think the last thing I want to ask you guys is, what are your thoughts about Twitter versus Threads? This is a closing sort of segment. Any thoughts regarding 100 million people buying into Threads and walking away, or having both accounts, a Twitter account and a Threads account?
I think Elon Musk has carried out the deftest self-immolation I've ever seen. I mean, he's basically just incinerated $44 billion, you know, very, very publicly. And he doesn't show any signs of slowing up. So where this one's going, I'm not sure. I've not tried Threads yet. You know, followers can still find me on Twitter and will still find me on Twitter and on my blog. But certainly Twitter needs to up its game and quick, because the way they're going, you know, Threads is catching up fast. They've already got 20% of Twitter's user base in supposedly active users.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, for me, when they did that thing a couple of weeks ago about limiting the number of reads you could have on Twitter.
Absolutely.
I was like, what's this about?
You can have the newspaper, but only pages 1, 3, and 5, Alex.
That's it. Inappropriate promoted tweets all over my timelines. I mean, yeah, it's sad what's happened to Twitter. It's just about okay. It works, and we use it. Obviously, we like it, but it could be better. Let's be honest. And yeah, we're going to have to give Threads a go, because I think lots of other people are.
I think a lot of people have gone over already. I think I had a conversation with Henry. I think my only caveat at the moment is trying to get my head around the security angle side of it to make sure that I'm you know, I've done all my double checks. My double checks are on it all. But a lot of people have gone over, and we'll see what happens with it regarding it. I think, you know, some of the aspects of it that I've read are really positive, and you might not get some of the nuances, the negative nuances of Twitter on there, but who knows? So all about the levels of moderation they put in place, and how they vet people's conduct on there. And sometimes on Twitter, I'm a little bit like, whoa, what's going on there regarding some individuals' behaviours and some large accounts, what they say. So yeah, it's a difficult one, really. He's trying to force people, I think, Elon, to pay for the services, which is understandable because he wants to make good his investment in it. But he's gone about it a bit ad hoc, I think, and a bit inconsistent. So it's, Meta, we're going to say, should we be investing in Meta now? It's already up a bundle year to date, but it's another shrewd move by him, seeing Twitter having its difficulties. He's taken advantage. Zuckerberg's gone, well, I'm going to do this now. So clever. Okie
Agreed.
dokie. Last thing I want to say regarding the Twin Peaks investing competition is a couple of individuals on the account that put the portfolios together. We've had CAPE, which has been taken over and I think has gone now. But if you've got CAPE in your portfolio, please contact myself and say which company you'd like to change it over to, and we'll put it back to the beginning of July's price, the last trading day of June. We'd leave that price at that price for you, and then we'll have it for July, so you can be in that. And IBPO, I think, is also another company that's changed its name or gone, and Dignity has gone as well. So you need to change your views on that one and give us another company for that to replace it. And then we'll run that for June as well. But essentially, that's all I've got, folks. For Alex, anything you want to add? You done?
All good, all done.
Okay, Henry, anything you want
All good from me. Thank you very much to everybody that's commented on YouTube. I've loved seeing all the comments, and to everybody that's reached out on Twitter and in on my blog and texting, great feedback. Keep it up, guys. Thank you very much.
to add?
Thank you.
Thank you all for your feedback. I got a lovely comment, which I'll probably read out another time, from Chris on YouTube, which I found really touching. It's really nice when somebody makes a comment regarding practicing kindness, and it's needed because it's a difficult time for everybody out there. And I keep talking about mental health and difficulties people have. So please, please, please show some kindness. I'm giving people a short thrift at the moment on Twitter that come onto my timeline and show some negativity and show passive aggressive sort of tones. They're going to get blocked, or they're going to get muted, or I won't reply. If you come to me with a mark of respect, I'll show you some respect. And you have to earn it. I've earned it. Henry's earned it. Alex has earned it. Don't come on my timeline to just give abuse. I don't see you on my timeline when things are going well. So just be kind. Okay. Ladies and gents, have a lovely 2 weeks. Got to look forward to the Wimbledon final come this weekend, I believe. Is that right? So hopefully the sunshine will be out. We'll have some clotted cream and some strawberries. And it was the Rum International Day on Saturday, so I drank lots of rum. I'm still recovering. I think that's why I'm a bit jaded today. But enjoy the summer. Do what you can. Kids are off school. Alex, thank you ever so much, sir, for today. And Henry, thank you ever so much. And thank you, everyone that's been listening to the podcast. Really appreciate your support and kindness. Until then, see you in 2 weeks' time. Take care. God bless you all.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.